Chapter 34, Beelzebub in Russia. All the further events that took place during this last sojourn of mine on the surface of the planet Earth, connected with the abnormal form of the ordinary being existence of those three-brained beings who please you, and many trifling incidents that threw light on the characteristic details of their peculiar psyche, began in this way. One morning, as I was walking near the pyramids, an elderly stranger, to all appearances not a native, approached me and, greeting me in the manner customary there, addressed me in the following words. "Doctor, you will perhaps do me the kindness to allow me to be your companion on your morning walk. I have noticed that you always walk alone in this neighborhood. I'm also very fond of walking here in the morning, and as I too am quite alone here in Egypt, I venture to propose that I should accompany you on these walks of yours." Since the vibrations of his radiations in relation to mine did not seem acutely Otkalupanian, or as your favorites would say, in such a case, he appeared to be congenial, and since I myself had also thought of establishing relations there with someone with whom, as a rest from active mentation, I could sometimes converse by following the course of freely flowing associations, I at once agreed to his proposal, and from that day forth spent the time of my morning strolls with him. During our further acquaintance, it transpired that this foreigner was a subject of the large community called Russia, and that among his compatriots, he was an important power-possessing being. In the course of our walks together, it so happened, why I don't know, that we began to talk chiefly about the weak will of three-brain beings, and about those weaknesses unworthy of them that they call vices, to which, particularly in recent times, they accustom themselves very quickly, and which finally become the sole basis for their existence, as well as for the quality of their being manifestations. Once, during one of these conversations, he suddenly turned to me and said, "My dear doctor, in my native land, the passion for alcohol has greatly increased in recent times and become widespread among people of all classes. And this passion, as you know, always leads, sooner or later, to those forms of mutual relationship which in general, as history shows, bring about the destruction of the age-old customs and attainments of society. This is why several far-sighted compatriots of mine, having at last understood the gravity of the situation that had arisen in our country, met together in order, perhaps, to devise some means or other to prevent a catastrophe. For the realization of this task of theirs, they then and there decided to found a society under the name of the People's Temperance League and chose me to be the head of this enterprise. At the present time, the activities of the League in organizing measures for the struggle against this national evil are in full swing. We have already done much, and we intend to do much more." Having said this, he thought for a moment and then continued, "Now, my dear doctor, if you were to ask my personal opinion as to the results to be expected from this league of ours, speaking frankly, even though I am at the head of it, I should be hard put to say anything good about it. As regards the general state of affairs of our league, my only hope personally is for a stroke of luck. In my opinion, the whole trouble is that this league is under the sponsorship of several groups who have the responsibility of accomplishing its task, but as each group follows its own particular aims and wishes, the solution of each separate question related to the basic aim of the league always produces controversy. And thanks to this, instead of improving the conditions for the speedy attainment of the fundamental aim of this undertaking, so important for my dear country, the members of our league only succeed in multiplying, day after day, all kinds of misunderstandings between them. Personal issues, gossip, intrigues, plots, and so on and so forth. As for myself, I have recently thought so much, rethought and consulted with so many people who have had some experience of life, trying to find some ways out of this situation, which has turned out so badly, that I nearly fell ill, and at the insistence of those near me was obliged to undertake this journey to Egypt with the sole object of resting. But, alas, even here in Egypt I have been unable to rest, because those same gloomy thoughts of mine give me no peace. Well, my dear doctor, now that you already know more or less the gist of this matter, which is the cause of my present inner imbalance, I will frankly confess the thoughts and hopes that have arisen in me in connection with our acquaintanceship. The point is, he continued, that during our long and frequent talks on the subjects of the pernicious vices of people and the possible measures for getting rid of them, I became fully convinced both of your subtle understanding of the psyche of people and of your great competence in creating conditions for the struggle against their weaknesses. And that is why I consider you the only man who might be the source of initiative for organizing and also for carrying out the activities of the League we have founded for the struggle against alcoholism. Yesterday morning, an idea came into my head, and after thinking it over all day and all evening, I finally decided to ask you this. Would you consent to go to my country, to Russia, and after you've seen on the spot everything that is going on there, help us to organize this league of ours in such a way that it may really bring my country the benefits for which it was founded? And he added, your impartial love of humanity gives me the courage to make this request, and also assures me that you will not refuse to take part in a work that may save millions of people. When this amiable elderly Russian finished speaking, I reflected for a moment and replied that I might very well accept his proposal to go to Russia, since that country could also be suitable for my chief aim. And I went on to say, at the present time I have but one aim, which is specifically to clear up for myself all the details of the manifestations of the human psyche, both in individuals taken separately and in their relations with one another in groups. Now, for studying the state and manifestations of the psyche of large groups, Russia would perhaps be very suitable for me, since, as I have understood from our talks in your country, this disease of the passion for alcohol has spread among almost the whole population. Consequently, I should have more opportunity to carry out my experiments on beings of various types, both individually and collectively. After this talk with the important Russian being, I soon got ready, and in a few days we left Egypt together. 2 weeks later, we were in the chief place of existence of this large community, the city still called, at that time, St. Petersburg. As soon as we arrived there, my new acquaintance devoted himself to his own affairs, which had greatly accumulated during his long absence. By that time, among other things, the large building constructed by the League for the purpose of the struggle against alcoholism had already been completed, and my new acquaintance immediately set to work to organize and prepare everything necessary for what is called the inauguration of that building and for launching the activities connected with it. Meanwhile, I began to go about everywhere, as was my usual habit, and to meet the beings of this city belonging to various circles, as they are called there, in order to become acquainted with the characteristic particularities of their manners and customs. Well, it was then that I observed, among other things, that in the presence of the beings belonging to this contemporary community, their ego individuality was beginning to take a form that was distinctly dual. After I noticed this and began specially to investigate the question, I finally discovered that this duality arose in their common presence chiefly owing to a discordance between the tempo of the place of their arising and existence and the form of their being mentation. From my point of view, my boy, you will understand very well this particular sharp duality of the individuality of the beings of this large community if I repeat to you, word for word, the opinion about them of our esteemed Mullah Nasruddin, which he gave me personally. I must tell you that during the second half of this latest sojourn of mine among your favorites, I happened more than once to meet that unique terrestrial sage, Mullah Nasruddin, and to have exchange of opinion with him on various life questions, as is said there. My personal meeting with him, during which he uttered these wise sayings of his, defining the real essence of the beings of this large community, took place on a part of your planet called Persia, not far from a city named Isfahan, where I had gone for my research concerning the most saintly activities of Ashad Ashirmash, also for clearing up on the spot the question of how there first arose that maleficent form of so-called politeness now existing everywhere among them. Before my arrival in Isfahan, I knew that the esteemed Mullah Nasruddin had left for the town of Talayel Nikum to stay with the stepson of the eldest daughter of his godfather. As soon as I reached this latter town, I sought him out, and during the whole time I was there, I visited him frequently. And sitting on the roof, as was the custom in this country, we would chat together about all kinds of subtle philosophic questions. One morning, on the second or third day after my arrival there, on my way to see him, my eye was caught by an unusual bustle in the streets. Everywhere people were sweeping, cleaning, and hanging up what are called carpets, shawls, flags, and so on. I thought evidently this is in preparation for one of the two celebrated annual festivals of the beings of this country. Having ascended to the roof and exchanged the usual greetings with our dear and most eminent sage, Mullah Nasruddin, I pointed toward what was happening in the street and asked him what it was all about. Over his face spread his customary benevolent grimace, which, though enchanting as always, nevertheless had a slight tinge of contempt, and he was about to say something, but at that moment the shouts of the town criers and the clatter of horses resounded in the street below. Then our wise Mullah, without a word, got up heavily, and taking me by the sleeve, led me to the edge of the roof, and giving me a knowing wink with his left eye, drew attention to a large cavalcade which was galloping by, consisting chiefly, as I later found out, of beings called Cossacks, belonging to that large community of Russia. In the center of this huge cavalcade, a Russian phaeton was rolling along, drawn by four horses, driven by a very fat and impressive coachman. His imposing appearance, quite Russian in manner, was due to the padding introduced in appropriate places under his clothes. In this phaeton were seated two beings, one of them characteristic of that country of Persia, and the other a typical Russian general. When this cavalcade had disappeared, the mullah, first of all, recited his favorite saying, "So and so must be. Do not do what must not be." And uttering his favorite exclamation, something like "Zrt," he returned to his place and suggested that I do the same. Then, having stirred the still smoldering charcoal in his kalyan, he sighed deeply and launched into the following tirade, which, as always, was not immediately comprehensible. Just now there passed by, escorted by a large number of thoroughbred turkeys, a crow of this country, who, although important and of high rank, was nevertheless molting and badly rumpled. High-ranking crows of this country, why, I do not know, no longer take a single step without these thoroughbred turkeys, evidently in the hope that perhaps the pitiable remains of their feathers, from being constantly exposed to the powerful radiations of these turkeys, may become a little stronger and stop falling out. Although I understood positively nothing of what he had just said, yet being familiar with his habit of expressing himself allegorically at first, I was not at all surprised, and did not question him, but patiently awaited his further explanations. And indeed, after he had delivered his tirade and had thoroughly finished hubble-bubbling the water in his kalyan, he gave me, with the subtle venom proper to him, a definition of the whole presence and the very essence of the beings of the contemporary community of Persia, and explained to me that he compared the Persian beings to the birds called crows, while the Russian beings, who had formed the cortege that had galloped by, he compared to the birds called turkeys. He developed this thought of his in a long dissertation. If we analyze impartially and sum up statistically the understanding and imagery prevalent among people of contemporary civilization, comparing the races that populate Europe with those of other continents, and draw an analogy between these races and birds, it may be said that the people who arise and exist on the continent of Europe and represent the very simus of contemporary civilization must certainly be called peacocks. That is, the bird with the most beautiful and gorgeous exterior, while the people dwelling on other continents must be called crows. That is, the mark of good for nothing, and the dirtiest of all birds. But as for those contemporary people who find the basic conditions for their arising and formation on the continent of Europe, but whose subsequent life, and consequently further stuffing, proceeds for some reason on other continents, and conversely, for those of our contemporaries who appear on God's earth on some other continent, and are further stuffed in the conditions prevailing in Europe, there is no better comparison than with the bird called turkey. This turkey, more than any other bird, expresses that something which is neither fish, flesh, fowl, nor good red herring, but is just, as is said, a half and a quarter plus three quarters. The best representative of these turkeys are the contemporary people of Russia, and it was precisely such turkeys that surrounded one of the chief crows of this country who just went dashing by. These Russians, indeed, correspond ideally to this original bird, as I will show you. Arising and formed on the continent of Asia, and above all having a pure heredity, both organic and psychic, forged in the course of many centuries, in the conditions of existence prevailing on this continent, they possess, in all respects, the nature of Asiatic people, and in consequence, they too should be crows. But since, in recent times, they have all been doing their utmost to become Europeans, and with this intent have been stuffing themselves accordingly, they are, little by little, ceasing to be crows. And since, according to various undoubtedly lawful data, they cannot turn into real peacocks, and having left the crows behind, but having not yet caught up with the peacocks, they are in themselves, as I have said, ideal turkeys. Although the turkey is very useful for the household, because its meat is better and more tasty than that of all other birds. Of course, if it is killed in the particular way that ancient peoples learned from long centuries of practice, yet in its living state, the turkey is indeed a strange bird and has a certain very special psyche, which is impossible even approximately to understand, especially for our people with their half-passive minds. One of the many specific features of the psyche of this strange bird, the turkey, is that he always finds it necessary to swagger, and thus, without rhyme or reason, will often puff himself up. Even when no one is looking, he struts and puffs himself out, and he does this solely because of his own imagination and silly dreams. Having said this, Mulla Nasruddin got up slowly and heavily and again pronounced his favorite saying, "So, and so, this must be it." But this time, with the ending, "Don't sit long where you shouldn't sit." He took me by the arm, and together we descended from the roof.